So I feel very honored that I can be amongst all of you today on this auspicious day of Ram Naomi. Some of you already attended some lectures the last few days, churning some nectar. But now I get to meet all of you, so that's nice. Thank you for coming. So, I mean, I don't feel I'm so qualified and, expert in Ram Leela. But nevertheless, I will try and give some little insights into some topics. I mainly like to try and extricate some instructions which are relevant for us. Because, sometimes we hear these nice leelas and we think, oh yeah, so nice, so interesting, so exciting. But then the real bottom line is, what's in it for us? What is Krishna trying to teach us here? And how does this apply to ourselves? How is this relevant to our lives? So, and as usual, we know that the Lord appears out of several reasons. First, of course, to kill the demons, but then also to give pleasure to the devotees, to give solace to the devotees. And there's always so many lessons, so many instructions he actually gives just by performing one leela, basically. So, and as we know, Lord Ramchandra, he comes as the ideal king. And in many ways we can say, you might know I spent quite a bit of time in India, Bangladesh, also Nepal. I used to spend a lot of time there. And actually, Ram Leela is almost more popular, in the Hindu countries than Krishna's Leelas. I mean, I remember I once was visiting Nepal and there was Ramayana on the TV. And everybody was just glued to the television. All the temple programs, everything was cancelled. Nobody would come. Everybody was just so obsessed, glued onto the TV there, watching the whole thing. I mean, I was amazed, I was amazed. I think once it was even broadcast in the morning time during Bhagavatam class or something. Bhagavatam class was cancelled. Everybody was sitting watching Ram Leela. Yeah, so people are almost obsessed by it. And I guess one reason why this is so, I believe, is that Krishna's pastimes are often for the non-believer as such, they're a little too far out sometimes, a little too mystical, Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, and it's a little too superhuman. Whereas Lord Ram's Leelas, already Adipurush Prabhu mentioned that this morning or so, they're more human-like. So people really identify and they get emotionally involved like anything. And this whole Ram Leela is just so dear to their hearts, and they live in it all, and they feel for all the different personalities there, especially because there seem to be so many unfair and unfortunate plots there in the whole Leela, so that people's emotions are just so involved. So that's why they are so attached to Lord Ram's pastimes. So, and as we have it going through the whole Bhagavatam also, there's always this battle between the demoniac and the divine, the demons and the devotees. I mean, this topic is really accompanying us through all the scriptures, really. And ultimately, the battle between Maya and Krishna. So, but here, the special emphasis is really on this mood of sacrificing one's own interest in selfless devotion for a higher purpose, to serve a higher principle, sacrificing one's own interest versus the battle between, you know, with envy, with demoniac desires of being the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer, the evil selfishness. This is really what is going on very clearly in this whole Leela. And definitely we can say today, that's already the first thing we can kind of extricate for ourselves. Today, the selfishness in the world is just immensely increasing. Over the last couple of days, we were also discussing this, how that affects the relationships, how in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, it immediately brings envy and competitiveness there, competition. And that really affects the relationships immensely, that the relationships become very superficial, so very external. People are very self-centered and selfish and. In fact, people are willing, you know, these days to do any abominable thing for their own self-interest, for their own, you know, purpose and convenience and so on. So that selfishness is definitely increasing, and it is also connected with economic development, actually. The more economic development we experience, the more sense gratification becomes the all in all, because without money, you can't really enjoy the sense as much. You know, you need some money in the pocket to enjoy life. So the more the economic development sets in, the more sense gratification becomes the goal in life, the more, you know, materialism sets in, selfishness, envy, and. And the more spiritual aspects, religiosity, are pushed aside and almost are diminishing completely. So that we can really observe really strongly also in this part of the world, you know, over the last 10, 20 years. When was the war finished here? When was that? How many years ago? Huh? 27 years ago. Is it that long, huh? Okay. So, yes. So in these last 27 years, there has been certainly so much more economic development, right? I was told Slovenia is the most economically advanced country amongst the former Yugoslavian countries, you know? Yeah, so, and proportionally, or the spiritual aspects and the spiritual interest in people is diminishing, definitely. Materialism pushes it aside, and religiosity is becoming less and less important. And of course, ultimately, we are the ones who are suffering under that tendency. We experience all different pains in our hearts and loneliness and envy on all levels and. So, yeah, so this is definitely going on. So basically, Ramayana is teaching us that actually in order to have more satisfying relationships, we have to make this shift from I to we. We have to sacrifice, we have to be willing to sacrifice our personal interest, our personal considerations for the benefit of us as a team, with Lord Ram in the center, with God in the center. Right? That's really one of the main, you know, lessons and kind of the essence of that Leela. And I mean, we can say even in sports, you know, sportive activities where sport is is exercised as a team, even though we as devotees, we consider it a bit of a waste of time, you know, to be too much engaged in sportive activities or something. But there is one good aspect certainly there, because all those sports which are exercised as a team, that is cultivated, that we sacrifice our personal victory, right, our personal success, we sacrifice that for the sake of the success of a team, right? The glory, our personal glory, we sacrifice for the glory of the whole team. That's what one learns, you know, as a football player or cricket player or whatever. So there's some little benefit there. So, yeah, so, and that's what it means to be a good team player, that we know everyone's strength and we play the ball at the right time to the other person rather than just running ourselves with the ball, right? That would be really considered, oh my God, you know, low class type thing, you know. Yeah, so this is what one learns, at least a little bit in sportive activities. So, and the Ramayana is trying to give us this lesson, this inspiration. It shows all kinds of personalities who embody that very spirit of self-sacrifice for the Lord's satisfaction, for a higher purpose, for higher principles, for higher values. Right? Yeah, so it is basically the fight between the heroic selflessness and, on the other side, the cruel and tragic selfishness and the reactions coming thereof of envy and selfishness and so on. And Lord Ram is the center of the whole thing there, right? So it helps us to make this paradigm shift, actually, from me to us, with centered around the Lord, with the Lord and being in the center. So, as we all know, Lord Ram, he appeared in Ayodhya, and his father Dasarath, he had Kausalya there as wife in Kaikeyi. So, and Lord Ram was the oldest son, so he was entitled to be the next king on the throne, as we know. So, and then just when that coronation was supposed to take place, this, you know, most shocking thing happened, that Kaikeyi's maidservant got into her ear, the maidservant. Of course, as we know, this is by superior arrangement, just for the sake of the Leela taking place. But again, it teaches us, you know, first of all, I mean, I hope nobody minds me saying this, and definitely such a statement has to come from a woman's mouth, but that's the power of a woman. Right? And also, women are known to be 9 times more lusty than men, and their lust manifests in a subtle way. Men are usually more lusty on the gross platform, but we women are more lusty on the subtle platform. And it also manifests in envy and competitiveness. So Kaikeyi's maidservant, she is really personifying this tendency of being so envious and just talking pajalpa, making politics, you know, a seemingly not so influential person like a maidservant, she's got that power to create some whole big drama there. Huh? I mean, that's quite mind-boggling, really, you know, isn't it? I mean, at least to me. So, yeah, I mean, she got into Kaikeyi saying, oh, actually, you know, your son should be the one. Bharat should be the one who should be on the throne, you know. Yes, this is all unfair, and you will suffer if Lord Ram will be on the throne there. This will reflect negatively towards you, and then his mother will be the favored one, and you will be neglected, and. You know, so she really, poisoned Kaikeyi's consciousness, Kaikeyi's heart, with all that kind of talk, you know. And then Kaikeyi felt completely victim of this. Yes, I mean, that's pretty amazing. That shows the poisonous effect of this envious talk. You know, it really gives that strong instruction. What power such envious nonsense talk has, how it can ruin everything. And actually this envy is indeed one of the main and foremost obstacles in even in our spiritual development. Actually, by the way, tomorrow morning that will be the topic in our seminar session, how envy manifests towards seniors, equals, and juniors. I mean, that's actually interesting, that often we think envy only manifests towards, you know, seniors, somebody who has something which we don't have. But no, that envy being in the heart comes out through all relationships. We basically try to use any relationship towards senior, towards equals, towards junior. We try to use any relationship to establish our superiority. Root cause of envy is that we want to be the supreme enjoyer, sense gratification. So, and then as soon as, as soon as there's somebody who seems to enjoy more, no, even towards inferiors, envy comes out. In very subtle forms, often undetected. We'll leave that discussion for tomorrow. Just a little bit of advertisement here. Yes, but no, this envy, my God, this is really one of the main and foremost obstacles. And there is one purport, I can't remember where it is, fifth canto, I think, or something. No, it's actually not in the purport. It's in the word-for-word translation. Probably Adipurush Prabhu, he is such a pundit. He knows where it is. I'm not much of a pundit. So, but there is this funny thing where Prabhupada says, Kalaha, the envious, and then in brackets, almost everyone. What was that? Oh, it wasn't a comment. I thought somebody was shouting the verse number here or something. Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada, you know, often has a very good sense of humor. So, see, I knew. At least I got the canto right. Yeah, so the envious, almost everyone. You know, because that's another thing that we often think, yes, envious, of course there's so much envy, but not me. No, of course not. I'm not envious. Because actually this, you know, this quality of envy is such a nasty quality that we, so ugly, actually, that we don't even like to admit that we have that ugly quality also there, you know. So that's why Prabhupada is saying almost everyone. I mean, that means we have to really include ourselves. We have to assume that we are part of these almost everyone, right? Yeah, that's how deeply rooted it is. And it's just so subtle. And we've been carrying this envy around with us for many, many lifetimes in our subtle body. And it has been accompanying us for so long. So, and that envy just ruins everything. It blocks everything. It poisons everything. And even more interesting is also in this Leela of Lord Ram that these envious intrigues comes from inside the family. It doesn't come from outside, but it comes from inside. Yeah? And this is also one instruction Prabhupada has given us, that the main, you know, the main threats to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, they don't come from outside. No, they come from inside. Exactly through that, through all this poisonous pajalpa and talking and fault finding and false news there, you know, how the fake news, that's how you call it. And I mean, this is going on big time these days within ISKCON. And the modern technology really facilitates it all so nicely. Facebook and all these social medias, you can spread it in no time. Yes, and this is such a distraction, such a poisonous aspect in our spiritual practice. And I mean, Prabhupada was so strongly preaching about this danger of pajalpa. There is this nice little story in Korma Prabhu's book about Prabhupada in Australia, where the devotees are coming back from India, and there is Upendra cooking lunch for Prabhupada. And Upendra just asks, you know, some devotees coming back from India, what's the news? What's he doing? What's she doing? This, that, you know, as we usually do. But Prabhupada heard this from his room. His room was right next to the kitchen. So Prabhupada heard it and he was saying, he was furious, he was angry, calling Upendra in his room, saying, what are you doing? You're talking pajalpa? And Upendra says, Prabhupada is talking about devotees, is that pajalpa? And Prabhupada says, yes, it is. This devotee, that devotee, this is nonsense talk. If two devotees meet, when two devotees meet, they should be talking about the Bhagavatam, about Bhagavad Gita, not this devotee, that devotee. And then Prabhupada made this statement. He said, this gossip will destroy our movement. Very heavy. Yes. And I mean, here, you know, in Ram Leela, we can see what a destructive effect this nonsense talk has. Right? And with Prabhupada, there was also this story where the devotees showed Prabhupada the new technology, telex machine, right? And they were all proudly showing, look, Prabhupada, we can, you know, send this, and immediately at the same time, the message comes out at the other end of the world. And then the devotees were saying, maybe every temple should have such a telex machine. And then we can communicate so much easier. And Prabhupada said, no. And he said, if every temple has such a telex machine, then you will talk pajalpa all over the world. Yes. And without telex machine, at least it is restricted, you know, to one room or something. So, but with telex machine, you can broadcast all kinds of nonsense all over the world. So, yeah, sometimes I'm wondering what he would say about Facebook or something. Can't help myself. Yeah, so in any case, this is really, it's one of the main and foremost lessons, at least for my humble self, to recognize just a not very influential person like Kaikeyi's maidservant. She can create such havoc. She can poison Kaikeyi's consciousness completely, that she loses all discrimination and just completely act so demoniacally, so irreligiously, and create such havoc and such suffering. Right? Yes. So, and then it's even Kaikeyi's maidservant who reminds Kaikeyi how to get there. Yes, you remember, you have these two boons, these two benedictions still, which were given to you for your wonderful service. You know, so here you can use them. One that, you know, your son, Bharat, will be the king, and that Rama has to go in exile. Fantastic. Yes, I mean, my God. Yes. So, and of course, she, Kaikeyi, yeah, she was so contaminated and poisoned that she thought, yeah, it was a good idea. And another lesson, of course, is also this bodily concept. My son has to be the king. You know? Yes, this whole I, me, and mine bodily concept. How this is the root of all kinds of miseries and conflicts, and I mean, even wars start over this, you know, my nation, and you know, it's bodily concept of life. Prabhupada was always saying it, you know, that's really the root cause of all suffering, is this bodily concept. Yeah, so, and then as we all know, Dasarath, he was so pained when he heard these news. He fainted. He, later on, he gave up his life and desperation and complete, he was just devastated, in devastation. But one thing is, he stuck to his promise. He stuck to his promise. He had given that promise that he would give two benedictions to Kaikeyi, and he stuck to it. He did not say, oh, sorry, no, not possible, or something. I mean, that's such an important Vaishnava quality, actually, to stick to one's word. To stick to one's promise, one's word of honor. Similar lesson we have there in Bali Maharaj, when Bali Maharaj was promising three steps of land. And even though these three steps ended up being very different than what he imagined, what he thought they would be, what he expected, but still, you know, he said, I mean, how can I not fulfill my promise? I've given my word. If I don't follow my promise, I will just be a liar, a cheater. Right? So, but let's have a look at, you know, our attitudes. How often do we give our word? But then we say, oh, sorry, now the circumstances have changed. It's not the way I thought it would be. And we think that's a justification for taking our promise back. But no, it's not. It's not. That is a very important quality to cultivate as a devotee. You know, to have that aspect of truthfulness, that once we say something, once we give our word, yes, I will do this, or yes, this will be there, or whatever. Once we give our word, that's it. That's it. I mean, unless we lie on our deathbed and physically can't do it or something. But even if things change, if all circumstances change and we realize, oh, okay, I have to actually sacrifice much more than I thought I would have to, doesn't matter. How can we not stick to our word? You know, that mood a devotee actually should have deeply ingrained in his or her heart. And I mean, Dasarath really, really exemplifies that, you know. It's such a glorious example that he is not going back on his offer there, on his promise. Yeah, so as devotees, we have to really strive to learn to walk our talk, not to say one thing but then do another thing. But no, once we say, we do. And that's it. By hook or by crook. Even if we have to really put ourselves out and accept so many other discomforts and disadvantages and so on, yeah. Yes. So, and then of course also Lord Ram is immediately accepting the order, which is also again an amazing example of sacrificing one's own interest for the sake of a higher purpose. Right? Following the orders of his father. Not putting him in some inconvenient situation or something. So, even though so many other personalities told him, oh, you shouldn't do that and this and that and so on. But now, you know, just to preserve the honor of his father, he sacrifices his whole personal interest and just walks out, leaves behind his opulence, his kingdom, everything. And ultimately that shows the opulence of detachment, of renunciation. It's such an opulence, actually. I mean, just imagine if we would be in that situation. My God, you know, we would be defending and making all kinds of intrigues and, right? Yes, yes. Yeah, let's be clear. You know, but he just walks out. Okay, fine. I'm going tonight. Yes. Even though whole Ayodhya loved him, they all wanted to see him on the throne. You know, the whole thing just seemed so unexpected, so unfair, so ridiculous. But still, he just accepted the order and left. Yes, completely detached. Very amazing. You know, such an example, again, for us to try and imbibe that, yes, that's what it means to be a devotee, actually, you know, to be willing to follow in Lord Ram's footsteps there, of sacrificing our own interest for a higher goal, a higher purpose, for common interest. Right? Yeah, so, and then also Lakshman, he also embodies this mood of sacrificing his personal advantage by being with his elder brother, standing at his by his side during his crisis type thing, following him. Sita Devi also, you know, showing the example of being an ideal wife, following her husband in any circumstance, not when everything is rosy and glorious and famous and comfortable. But no, in any situation, my God, how much we're falling short in that one these days. You know? Yes, I mean, my God. As soon as people don't like things anymore in married life, oh, well, let's get divorced. Let's look for another person. You know? We're falling short that so much in that regards of being willing to sacrifice our inconvenience, you know, sacrifice our convenience, our self-interest for the sake of keeping our vows for a higher purpose. I mean, that attitude within marriage is almost lost and forgotten, we can say. That's why we have such a high divorce rate, 60% or something. You know, it's shameful, actually. But that's actually one of the main root causes for our high divorce rate, that we don't enter marriage with that commitment. Again, You know, that attitude of once I give my word, I stick to it. Even if it turns out to be completely different as I expected it to be. But no, I've given my word, I stick to it. It's a sacred vow I have given in the presence of the Lord, of the Vaishnavas. Oh, how can I just walk out and pretend it never happened or something? You know? Yes, I mean, that should be the attitude in entering marriage. It's interesting to observe. Often we think we can fix this dilemma of this high divorce rate by giving a longer period of association. But it doesn't matter how long, you know, one associates before entering marriage. If we don't enter with that commitment, good chance that we will get divorced anyway. Yeah, it's all about cultivating that mood of committing. Seeing the spouse as Krishna's gift. This is what Krishna is giving me. This is what I deserve for my purification. And whatever comes, I stick with it through all ups and downs. Huh? That's actually how we enter marriage in spiritual life. And not, oh, let's see if I like it. And I want a guarantee for sense gratification. So let's try each other out a little bit. Let's live together for 6 months and see how nice it will be. And then maybe we sign the contract. I mean, no. This is not how we enter marriage in spiritual life, you know? Yes. But it tends to be more and more common, you know? Even in ISKCON. Yes. Yeah, but this is not the way to go about it. And it will not reduce our high divorce rate, definitely not. The only thing which will reduce our divorce rate is this commitment, cultivating this commitment. And it requires faith. It requires faith in Krishna. Yes, Krishna is there. There must be some reason why Krishna puts me in this situation. What does he want me to learn? He wants to teach me something here, obviously. And actually, I deserve so much more than this, but Krishna is so kind, he only gives me one drop of what I really deserve. That should be the Krishna conscious attitude. And if we have that mood and attitude, then we can survive any trial and tribulation in marriage. And if we overcome all these challenges in married life, that actually makes a relationship so much deeper. You know, the easy thing is always to throw in the towel and flee the scene and run off. That's the easy thing. But to work through difficulties, that really deepens the relationship like anything. And we become deep and mature and solid devotees, overcoming all kinds of testing situations and obstacles. Right? So, and that's also what Sita Devi is teaching us here, you know, that she sticks to him no matter what, you know. Yes, and then another wonderful lesson we can see from Bharat's attitude, you know, that when he hears the news that he should be the king now, he is not all, hoo-hoo, so I made it. Yes, I knew I should be the one. But no, he refuses actually. He's pained hearing it. No, how can I be the king? You know, not possible in Ram's absence, not possible. You know, so therefore, you know, he wants Lord Ram's shoes there, slippers on the throne, and he just on his behalf, he somehow manages things, but he lives like a hermit or simple, and so this shows this non-competitiveness. I mean, isn't that amazing? We all have so much of this competitiveness in our hearts, especially, by the way, also, well, yeah, it's there in women, but it's also there in men too. It's an interesting thing to observe that male body comes along with a stronger ego, actually. Anybody who is married knows this. This is also Krishna's divine arrangement, because man's purifying duty is to take charge. So just to make sure he plays that role, he's given a stronger ego, just to make sure he does. That motivates a man to play that role of taking charge. If he wouldn't have that stronger ego, he probably wouldn't want to play that role. But somebody has to play it, right? So that's why the male body comes along with a stronger ego. So, and then, you know, you imagine so many men on one place there, and everybody has the stronger ego and wants to take charge. So naturally, usually we have all kinds of power games and politics going on. So much competitiveness there. All the egos are clashing. So the men have that challenge to play that purifying duty of taking charge, but as humble servant. That's not easy. That's a challenge. That's really difficult, actually. Because usually as soon as we want to lead and take charge, the ego happily wants to be part of it, right? So to take charge and lead as humble servant, wow, that's a challenge. That's a challenge. So the man's path, in my humble opinion, it's more challenging, actually, more difficult than for us women, you know? But in any case, so Bharat shows such a wonderful example that he is free of this competitiveness, of this rivalry and, you know? But yes, completely free of that. Amazing. Yes. So, and then of course, Vama also plays the role of the dutiful husband, doing anything to protect and save Sita. Right? And, yeah, I mean, Ravana, when we hear these stories with these big demons, Ravana or Hiranyakashipu, we often tend to think, oh yeah, they're just stories. Oh, thank God, this Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, we don't have them these days and so on. And we don't even realize, no, not only do we have them these days, but actually we all carry a little Ravana, a little Hiranyakashipu there in our own hearts, actually. Right? And Kali Yuga, demon and a devotee, they live in the same body. That's the whole thing. And as we know, you know, all these great demons, they always try to destroy religiosity, destroy Brahminical culture, right? And establish themselves as supreme enjoyer, controller, and. So, and I mean, definitely this is going on these days in the world, that Brahminical culture, religiosity, Krishna's system is being undermined and. And even we have to admit that not so easy for us sometimes to accept Krishna's system. You know, we are attached to actually the modern worldviews, the modern demoniac visions and concepts of life, actually. We quite like it. We are attached. It's all going on pretty in a subtle way. Yes. And just recently, I came across a pretty strong, you know, quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Speaks very strongly in bold words. You want to hear this? Shall I be so bold to share this? So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, ooh, I hardly even dare to say this, you know. He says, if I stop preaching the unbiased truth due to fear that people will not like it, I am accepting the non-Vedic way, rejecting the Vedic way. Then I become an atheist and I lose my faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the personification of truth. Very heavy, strong words, you know? And I mean, aren't we often affected by this fear that the unbiased truth, people will not like it? You know? That we become unpopular if we speak what needs to be said? Yeah, that is there, that is there. So, and Bhaktisiddhanta is saying it's actually undercover atheism, actually. It actually means we are doubting Krishna's system and Krishna's culture. And we are doubting Krishna, ultimately. We don't have faith in Krishna, that Krishna's system is better than all the modern, you know, systems. We don't have that faith. So it actually means we're rejecting the Vedic way, we're accepting the non-Vedic way. We become atheists and we lose our faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or in our case, not lose our faith, we will never cultivate it. Better like that. Yeah, so I mean, this is there. This is there. Tendency very strong in these modern days of Kali Yuga. So we all have a little bit of this Ravan Hiranyakashipu mentality there in our hearts. So we should not think that, oh, thank God this is all happening outside of us or something. But no, it is really directly addressing us here, really. Yeah, so in this way, Ramayana is teaching us that, you know, in order to actually have deeper, meaningful relationships, we have to make that sacrifice of sacrificing our own personal interest for a common interest, for a higher purpose with the Lord being in the center. Then we will have some deeper and more fulfilling and joyful and happy relationships. Right? So also one little thing came to my mind. Time is running out. In the same way how Hanuman was jumping, you know, all the way to Lanka, and he had his army of monkeys. And he was empowered by his surrender to his Lord and Master. That empowered him. In the same way we can say Prabhupada, he was also jumping all the way to America. He had his army of monkeys. And what empowered him was really his unflinching faith in the instruction of his Gurudev, you know, unflinching faith. Somehow I have to fulfill this order. And that empowered him so immensely. So in the same way, we can also at least one tiny little drop of empowerment, we can also actually receive if we take Guru's orders as our life and soul. Yes. In one lecture, I think that was on Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance or something, Prabhupada actually shares these two secrets of his success. And he says, he shares that, you know, one secret is just this that he was completely sold out to execute his guru's orders. He was willing to lay down his life. Yes. He was willing to lay down his life. And he realized this need of this attitude. I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He makes some comment on one Bhagavad Gita verse that this should be the attitude of a true disciple. Right? You probably know better than me. But yeah, and Prabhupada shares that when he read this comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that this is the necessary qualification of a true disciple, to be willing to lay down his life in order to fulfill his guru's mission. That kind of hit him. And he imbibed that mood. Right? And then the second secret of success was that he felt helplessly dependent on the mercy of his guru, of the previous acharyas, of the Lord himself. Helplessly dependent. And we might have heard this heart-moving story in the book Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. How Prabhupada... Anybody knows this book by any chance? Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. Oh, not very many of you. I mean, if you ever go to India, you have to get this book. This is one of my favorite books about Prabhupada's pastimes, because it really gives insights into Prabhupada's life, which we don't really have much access to. His life before he left India, how he prepared himself to fulfill this impossible mission. This book is a whole compilation of all kinds of memories which personalities share who knew Prabhupada before he left India, from Vrindavan, from Mayapur, from Delhi, and. And this is very heart-moving and very, very sweet to get some little insights into this phase of Prabhupada's life. And Prabhupada himself was not speaking much about this. He was not saying, oh yes, I did this, I did that, and so on. Now Prabhupada would have never talked like that. But in this very book there is this amazing story how Prabhupada used to go regularly to Advaita Acharya's house already as a grihastha. And he would sit there the whole day praying, chanting japa and praying. And the day before Prabhupada got onto the Jaladuta to go to America, he spent the whole day there praying in utter hopelessness, feeling completely unqualified. That's how he prepared himself, actually. Yes. And because of these two aspects, these two secrets, Prabhupada being completely sold out to fulfilling his guru's orders, being willing to lay down his life, and feeling completely unqualified and helplessly dependent on guru's mercy. These two things that enabled him to be an instrument in Krishna's hands. Yes, sir. So if we can just accept one drop of that mood, then we probably could be doing so much more in our humble preaching efforts, you know, as we are doing now. But our bad luck is that we feel we are so qualified. We think we can do it all. So then Krishna says, all right, then you don't need me, you know. But actually, to really transform a person's heart, one needs some little empowerment of the Lord. Otherwise, we can maybe do some impressive performance or something, but to actually transform people's hearts, we need some empowerment. Only Krishna can do that, actually, through us. We, out of our own strength, we don't have that power, really. So in any case, let us finish on that note, that yes, like Hanuman, Prabhupada was leaping to America and having that same faith and full surrender to his Lord and Master as Hanuman had, and with his army of monkeys. Because really, I mean, you know, the personalities Prabhupada started this movement with, from a Tio point of view, they were very unqualified. But yes, by Krishna's mercy and empowerment, it all happens. Right? Okay, so I guess we are meant to move on to the next part of the program. Just before I finish, I want to announce a couple of things. First of all, next weekend, We do have a holy name retreat in Lika. You know where Lika is? Some of you know. In Croatia, not so far, just some four hours drive or something. And this is one part of our mission. I like to conduct these holy name retreats. I have it every year in Eka Chakra. Puruji here was with us there in Eka Chakra. Very sweet experience. And yeah, I try to inspire devotees like that and serve them by really pulling them out of their usual distractions and responsibilities, leaving everything behind. One has to really go away. One cannot have this in the temple or something. One has to go in seclusion. And yeah, I'm like the tour guide there. You get a whole folder with printed materials and I present things and then we apply in japa and kirtan and exercises. In evening kirtans, we apply what we discussed during the day and. So it's it can even be a life-changing experience, actually. So next week, Friday, is the day of arrival there. Then Saturday, Sunday, and half the Monday, because it's the Easter weekend. So Monday is free. So Monday after lunch, it is time of departure. If you want to see further details, I have a website, theholynameretreat.net. There you will find all the details with daily schedule and. So that's one thing. And then I also want to show you my humble attempt of putting a little book out. This only appeared 6 weeks ago or something, just in time for the ISKCON Leadership Sangha we had in Mayapur. Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. Yes, it is a little revolutionary maybe. Challenging. It's meant to inspire transformation. It's not giving some entertainment or something. But it is meant to inspire transformation. It is meant to shake us up a little bit. It is putting in question so many modern, you know, concepts and visions and. So, yes, I would feel very honored if I can put one of these books into your hands and into your life. €9, not very much. We will have a little table there. And what's her name? Spela Madhuji. She will be assisting me to distribute it, if you like to have one. Okay, so thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki.